When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
We continue the show here at Texas Card House. We're at the Spring location, and John has talked about this place quite a bit. You know, he speaks for Texas Card House, and we're here. We've done multiple shows at the locations around the city. The Spring location is great. They have Sean was being very funny during the break. They have two security guys here, so you don't have to worry about getting beat up by an NFL legend if you walk in. Adrian Peterson is not going to exact revenge on you if you run your mouth like you're not supposed to. He's not here. And it's a safe environment. They got two games going on right now. If that's something you want to do, John's going to join a game at some point. So if you want to play against John and take his money, you can do that here as we continue the show. So that's where we are. We're going to be at East River 9 tomorrow. The entire station will be there. For today, it's just the John and Lance show and my show, but the entire station will be at East River 9 tomorrow. And then, of course, later in the day tomorrow, it's our listener appreciation party. I've seen some people get at me about a ticket late in the process. I have been told we are at capacity. I cannot help you in that regard anymore. I apologize if you did not get the opportunity to win something from us. And I've already given out my special invitee tickets to someone. I've already done that. We are full. Hopefully you got in. Daniel, who is going to the party, came by and dropped off tacos. And if you want to drop off food, you can. If you're around Spring, you want to feed John or myself, we appreciate that from Daniel. You can join Daniel in that. But beyond trying to create my perfect lunch, we can talk about what happened last night at Daikin. The Astros win a game that looked like it was going to get away from them. They're down to the Yankees early, and that lineup was impotent. It felt like another one of those nights where the lineup wasn't going to come through at home. Unfortunately, Jason Alexander did not have the outings we've been accustomed to with him. It felt like it was going to go in the wrong direction, and then it didn't. The Astros' bats woke up. The Yankees are not happy with the ump behind the plate. Hell, the game ended on a call they didn't like. Jazz Chisholm had a relatively long conversation with the home plate umpire after Cody Bellinger, of all people, hit a three-run home run to make it a one-run game. Chisholm had a chance to tie the game. You know, if he didn't duplicate his performance in the home run derby, if he actually hit a home run, that game could have gotten away from the Astros. It didn't. The call was... I understand why Chisholm wasn't thrilled, and it was just the final straw for a Yankees team who didn't think they got the benefit of the doubt when it came to calls behind the plate. But hey, that ain't our problem. The Astros needed that win, and with that win, they're now four games up on the Mariners because the Mariners are the Mariners, and they continue to lose. So the Astros have the Yankees tonight as well. That game's on MLB Network. If you want to watch it that way, I think it'll be on Space 8 Home Network as well. So it's Home Network as well. So you get the 8-7 win. It got closer than you would like. Brian Abreu gave up that three-run home run to Cody Bellinger. At this point, we have not heard word on where Hader is. We know he's going to get the 3 weeks that he needs to see and then see if he can ramp it up. I bring him up because Brian Abreu right now is your closer when you get in the playoffs. And yesterday, that's a four-run lead, and maybe that's just what it is. He's pitching with a four-run lead, and that's not a spot where he's going to lock in. It's a weird thing. Your job is actually easier when you have a little more leeway. But for Astros pitchers who are closers, it generally doesn't work that way, where less pressure, better results. They generally make the game more interesting than it should. We go all the way back to Ken Giles, who at one point was perfect closing games for the Astros, but when he wasn't in a closing situation, the results varied. Ryan Pressly had his issues with multiple run leads. That's where the name Stressly came from. Hader, not as bad as the previous two, and then Abreu last night made that game a little tight, but you got the call at the end, and you move on. Yordan, another nice day for him. Jeremy Peña hits the home run as well. So Yordan, since he's come back, flies in the face of the assertion, or at least the assumption by one Will Kunkel, that he'd rather have Jake Meyers back than Yordan. Now this, I'll shoot him some bail. This was if Yordan wasn't going to be the Yordan of previous years. If he was going to be Yordan that started the year, he didn't want him back. He would rather have Jake Meyers. By the way, Jake Meyers fouled the ball off his foot in a rehab assignment. We'll see where he stands when we get word on that. But Yordan, since he's been back, you look at some of the numbers. He's hitting over .430. He's got a double home run and five runs batted in. And he's walked eight times and struck out just a couple times. So it looks like the Yordan that we expected when the season began, one of the most feared hitters in baseball, he's returning to that form, which is right in time because we know this lineup is not dependable. So if you're going to get that bat back in the lineup and hitting the way he is, he's welcome. So you win that one 8-7, and you see if you can get another one tonight with the Yankees still in town. There was some not-so-good news. Spencer Arrighetti has the dreaded elbow inflammation. So if we go by recent history, you can pack Spencer Arrighetti up until sometime in 2027. It's unfortunate that that's how it's been for the Astros, but if we just assume that it's the worst, and why not when it comes to Astros pitchers, Arrighetti, who had been pitching better lately, is someone who right now is going to go on the 15-day IL, and history suggests that's going to be a longer stint away from the game. So now you start to kind of hone in on who you think is going to be part of this rotation in the playoffs. Luis Garcia, good performance. Christian Javier, a great one. No-hit baseball. Those are your viable options, it feels like, for that number three starter at the moment, with Jason Alexander likely a distant third in the race for that, of course, with Hunter Brown and Framber as your top two. Sean, can we have that Joe Espada sound ready? Because I mentioned Framber, and that story is still a point of contention. You have ex-baseball players continuing to talk about that it popped up last night where no one who plays baseball, at least from the outside looking in, believes that was an accident. There's some question about why would Framber try to hurt his own player. I don't think Framber was trying to hurt his player. I think he just got mad and threw a pitch that Salazar wasn't expecting. But the consensus, it appears, from most players, they think he did that on purpose. Well, Joe Espada, who it has been reported called in both guys to have a discussion about it, spoke about it before the game yesterday. Here's Joe Espada on Framber and Cesar Salazar.
So yesterday I obviously met with Salazar and Valdez once I finished talking to you post-game. And I really wanted to get down to, number one was the asking him to step off. I wanted to know about the thought process, what, you know, which pitch, who was calling which pitch and what. And I wanted to hear from both of them at the same time. I wanted to have a conversation face-to-face because I wanted to hear the truth about the whole entire thing that happened in that inning. I have a lot of respect for both players, and I truly believe that when we have these conversations, that they're honest, and I want them to tell me the truth, and I want them to tell you guys the truth once they, you know, talk to the media. So I don't want to get into specifics, but I do want to say that I want to put this behind us. There's a lot of speculations and stuff that is being sent on media, which I don't read, but they make me, you know, people tell me what's going on, and I don't like it. A lot of that stuff is not true, but I understand the environment and the what comes with it, right? So I appreciate if we can just get past this and go back to, you know, baseball.
So, Sean, you are someone who can decipher coach speak, and certainly this show does its job. At least we find it entertaining to try to figure out what a coach actually said. Did Espada actually say anything there?
Not really. He didn't really. Even on the grading scale of, like, he's obviously not going to come in there and, like, I guess differ from the party line from last night of it was a mix-up and, you know, definitely not on purpose, definitely no malice intended. He wasn't going to go in there and be like, you know what, I slept on it. What was Fromber doing? Like he's not going to do that. I know when a microphone gets put in his face, he's not going to do that. Even on that scale, it was D'Amico Ryan's level of just, hey guys, we gotta be better. You know, we're professionals. I like our team. Like, it's just like really nothing.
Yeah, we're gonna move on from this, and hope it doesn't pop up again, I guess. And you would imagine something as overt as what happened a couple nights ago won't happen again. But yeah, it's a lot of, hey, it's over, guys, right? I mean, it's out there in the media. Some it's not true. I'm not going to actually tell you what's not true, but just know that it's not true. I mean, whatever the speculation is, it's not true. Okay, there we stand.
Whatever you're speculating, not true.
Yeah, I'm not going to be specific about what's not true because, hey, you ain't going to catch me in something. But I'm just going to tell you it's not true. Okay, there it is. That's Joe Espada on the incident after talking to the two parties involved. He wants to move on. I guess we can move on. But I do want to bring this up before we go to break. There does need to be an investigation for this. With Arrigetti now down, and of course people really want to know why so many Astros pitchers deal with these type of problems and problems that lead to them having long absences, there needs to be some type of scientific investigation into the arms of Hunter Brown and Fromber. They're the only ones who start for this team who don't deal with it. And John took offense because he thinks I'm putting something out in the ether that's going to lead to a devastating injury. All I have is evidence that these guys somehow survive the teachings of Brent Strom and his followers. I don't know what it is, but those two, every outing, you can expect them to be out there. Every turn in the rotation. So I don't know what science needs to be done. I know sometimes science takes a backseat for certain people. But those two guys need to be investigated. Not because I think anything is legal going on, but the fact that they have been able to seem impervious to what has afflicted every other Astro starter really the last couple seasons is a credit to them. Maybe it's just luck. Maybe that's why Fromber does what he wants. Because if he did what the Astros wanted him to do, there'd be major problems. And, you know, that man's trying to get paid this offseason. So we'll see. Credit to those guys for somehow surviving the epidemic of Astro arm problems. And hopefully that continues as the Astros head to the playoffs. It almost feels like a lock now. September 4th, their lead somehow keeps expanding over the Rangers and the Mariners. Don't want to be a hex, but we've always said that this Astros team's making the playoffs. Now it'll just be a question of how healthy can they be and can they get some consistency from their lineup. All right, we'll go to break with that. The Texans were back at practice yesterday. We'll hear from some of the parties involved because CJ has a goal for Nico Collins. We got an answer about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, so we'll discuss that. Of course, this is the first day of the regular season in the NFL. It's Eagles and Cowboys. There's a story involving the Eagles and Cowboys about how which would have made tonight's game even more dramatic. We'll talk about that. And in fact, for people who don't know, you can hear that game here right on ESPN 97.5. So, of course, it's on television. But if you have things to do at night, you got somewhere to be, you can actually hear that game with us. We're going to provide live games throughout the football season. So if you're out and about driving around, we'll have Cowboys-Eagles tonight.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Texas Card House. Here's Del Olalea.
So we'll get to the Texans in a bit, but just to point out apparently the far-reaching effects of the Framber Salazar thing. Dallas Braden, who we played audio from regarding this incident this week, was on, and Dennis sent us a clip that he's talked to people near the Astros. In fact, he said very close in that organization, or at least near the organization, and said the attitude that Fromber's displayed has been something they've been dealing with for a while. Does a while mean the last month and a half, when it's become pretty clear of his, let's just say, unhappiness, if we want to call it that, or is that something that's been brewing all year long? Whatever it is, the baseball world has taken notice. Ken Rosenthal did a hit with foul territory and said if he was going to give Fromber over $100 million, he would want answers to this. So this isn't going to leave Fromber. It has offended baseball people in a way I did not expect. The Astros generally have been looked at, really since the cheating scandal, as an organization that's kind of what you want to be in baseball. Consistent. They find ways to overcome losing big money free agents and are always there. The Ben Verlander inevitable thing, while we joke about it, is something that, like, baseball kind of actually believes in, that the Astros will always be around, at least this version of them. But this type of attention, they haven't really gotten in a while, and it's really honed in on one player. So Fromber's going to have to wear it like Salazar wore it, and we'll see if it really affects his earning power this offseason. Okay, we'll get away from that. So the Texans, they got a game on Sunday against the Rams. Well, D'Amico Ryans is tired of talking about the offensive line. We did get some injury report news. We were wondering whether Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would be at practice and participating. That was the case, so he continues to look to be on track to play in week one. Christian Kirk is another story. Christian Kirk, who is your at least most proven wide receiver acquisition this offseason, is someone dealing with a hamstring injury. He and Braxton Berrios, the Berrios thing is less important. A surprise to make the roster, but if anything, Berrios, his contributions were going to be on special teams as a returner, at least in game one. Chris Kirk's a different story. He is the only other receiver, other than Hutchinson, I guess, and I wouldn't call Hutchinson established, that has made a real mark in the NFL, besides Nico Collins. So if Christian Kirk is unavailable, it does likely put more of the target share on Higgins. Of course, you do have Dalton Schultz as an experienced pass-catching tight end, and we'll see what it means for Noel. If Christian Kirk can't go, we'll see if he can practice today. He was unavailable because of the hamstring to practice yesterday. Nico Collins is that established star, but C.J. Stroud wants to turn him into a bigger star than he already is. Here's C.J. Stroud on one of his goals for this year regarding Nico Collins.
I told him I'd be doing him a discourtesy if I didn't make him a superstar. It was one of our first conversations. I don't know. I've always kind of had that mindset since I've been in, like, middle school. It's like I want to make my receivers look really good and make it easy on them. For me, that's like anticipation, accuracy, timing. And because a lot of times guys are open, quarterbacks are just late or throw bad balls. So it's my job to do that. So I don't know. We had that conversation when I first got here. And I seen the way he moved, how big he was, how fast he was. He looked like somebody like I don't want to give y'all a word. I'll put it on Twitter or something. So leave it alone.
What's the word? What do we think that word is, Sean? Because generational, you can say at a press conference. Elite, can you say he's a beast? Well, I wonder what word he was thinking about using, but decided not to. We'll see. I don't know if he's tweeted about it, but Nico Collins, we can expect a large number of targets this way. We already did, but if we're going by what CJ's talking about, expect early and often and late as well for Nico Collins to get balls thrown his way. And it's not a great Rams secondary. So if the O-line can keep CJ upright, it could be a big day for Nico Collins in week one. You start to look at that Rams secondary. They have to be protected by that defensive front that's got a lot of the conversation leading up to the game. But Quinn Lake is their nickel. Kello Witherspoon is one of their starting corners. And Darius Williams, who's been around back and forth with the Rams, he's been there a couple times now, a couple stints, is another corner. Like, Cam Kitchens is a nice young safety. Cam Crow's pretty good. But as far as their corners are concerned, Nico's going to have a distinct advantage. How he has a pretty much an advantage on any corner he faces, considering all the things he talked about, the size, the speed. But it could be a big day for that Texans wide receiver core, and particularly Nico. You just got to see if the position group that D'Amico Ryan's no longer wants to talk about can get the job done. It's been the conversation all offseason. I get why D'Amico doesn't want to talk about it. He was thrilled to be asked about his tight ends, though. Apparently, Randy McAvoy got a question in, and D'Amico was like, that's a good question. And then he went on to wax poetic about what his tight ends have done to improve. So, Dalton Schultz, no Brevin Jordan, but of course you have Kate Stover, who missed time last year with injury. Those are a couple guys he's looking forward to seeing displayed on Sunday. So we'll see if the tight ends can improve, because last time we saw one particular tight end, he was one of the guys people wanted out of town. Dalton Schultz did not show himself. At least he didn't put out a good performance against the Chiefs. Dalton Schultz ain't looking to block. We'll see if he's put in those situations with Nick Cayley, if some of that effort has improved, because it appeared non-existent against the Chiefs way back in that divisional round game. So Texans-Rams is one of the stories, and we'll see, as I said, can Christian Kirk go? And if he can, makes me feel better. You're putting a lot on the plate of a couple rookies, along with Hutchinson, if you lose out on Kirk week one. And he's kind of in a prove-it deal for himself. He is at that point in his career where, under contract, big number this year, but going forward, can he be a guy who winds up on the Titans because they give receivers of that age money to come in? Or is he a guy who's going to strictly be on one-year deals the rest of the way? So this is a big year for Kirk. As much as we talk about it from the team perspective, there are guys like Schultz who needs to show out this year, and also Christian Kirk, who needs to show, I'm still a viable receiver. I'm playing with a young quarterback that people like. Do I still got it? And can I still be an effective slot receiver? So as much as it would help the Texans, Kirk playing well is in his best interest going forward for the rest of his career as well. So we'll see if he's back. All right, we'll go to break with that. We've got something I want to get to, because it's on my television, well, at least on the televisions here at Texas Card House. Keyshawn Henderson's on television right now, the five-star recruit for the Cougars. They're replaying a game on Space City Home Network that he played last week. And I got to say, I haven't seen a lot of him. Like, I see a clip or two, but I don't see full games. After watching him while the guys are doing the show, I get it. And we'll talk about what his goals are, because he is one of the bigger recruits in Houston Cougar history, if not the biggest recruit. And he's got some goals for himself this year, and what type of guy the Cougars might be getting if he can accomplish those goals. So we'll talk about him, and we'll get into the NFL as a whole, because I mentioned that Cowboys story. It could be an even spicier game if the Eagles got their way. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. All right, if you want to call in, the number is 713-780-3776. We're at Texas Card House till noon. We'll be back.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Card House. Here's Del Olalea.
So right now, as I said, Space City Home Network has Keyshawn Henderson's last game, happened last week, on as a replay. I see it. I get it. I hadn't seen a full game from him, but I've openly talked about how I didn't get it with Arch as far as the physical tools when people were like elevating him to the five-star status, can't miss, same way I thought about Connor Wegman when I saw him in that first Aggie spring game. I didn't really see the juice that people were talking about. Now, of course, he's a Coug. Hopefully, after starting off the year 1-0, that continues for the Cougs, because you would like a good foundation for when this kid comes in. Now, his goal for the season is to throw for 6,000 yards. He wants to throw the ball 50 times a game. I'm not sure he's going to get the opportunity, because they're just going to continue to put points on people, at least if I go by game one. I don't know the strength of the school he's playing, but they're like up 27-7 in the third quarter. He threw six touchdowns or counted for six. There's like a play that happened where he pretty much avoided a sack in his own end zone and then ran 98 yards for a touchdown. This is the type of talent they're bringing in.
I saw that play.
Yeah. I don't know what it's going to take. He's been solid with the Cougs for months now. It feels like he's just going to sign on the dotted line in December. I would just say, if you get a little shaky at any, if he feels a little shaky at any point, it looks like he's worth the Bryce Underwood bag. It looks like that's the guy who you go, you know what, whatever it takes. And I'm sure there may be a team out there with a bigger brand name than the Cougs who thinks the same way. He may be a kid who isn't. His mind isn't changed by things like that, I would just say. I don't know what they have in their back pocket. I'm sure he's got a very lucrative NIL deal already, the Cougs have set up for him. But if the other names keep calling, and he seems like someone who's listening, from what I'm watching, you make sure you get that done for him.
And
make sure it gets done.
I don't want to, you know, give any unsolicited advice, but I would say, maybe you do. Just open up your recruitment. You still go to U of H.
Hey, what are you doing?
You can get a couple extra dollars by
opening. I'm not looking for him to milk U of H. I'm just saying, if it comes around where the number is being thrown around, or things he, for the sake of being a good businessman, has to listen.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know if the Cougs would even have to match it, but you know, get close.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are, but from what I can tell,
if you're purely trying to make as much money as possible, just.
Yeah, I don't know if that's his goal. I'm not going to put that on the young man. But the reality starts to strike, and you're like, wow, how much would a school desperate for his talents do? How much would they pony up?
Take a visit to Texas Tech.
Nah, stop it. Stop it. Stop with the Texas Tech.
They got money.
What's his name? Cody Campbell? What's that guy's last name?
Yeah, you got it.
Yes, they do. They have plenty. They've got a billionaire backing them. The Cougs have a billionaire of their own, but he's got other things he's got to pay for, you know, like an NBA franchise. I'm just not sure how much it'll take, or if it will take much, because he appears to be a Coug through and through. But, man, you see it. And the clips that were floating around from his performance last week, really, really impressive. And I did not know this because I haven't been locked on his high school team, but Michael Bishop, the former K-State quarterback, is his head coach. I saw him on the sideline here earlier as I was watching the game. So he does have a guy who had a pretty good college career, and he made it to the NFL, but didn't exactly have the perfect stature to be an NFL quarterback. But Michael Bishop was a star in college. Now the Aggies ruined what could have been a great year for K-State, but we're talking about the Sir Parker years, and I forgot the quarterback's name. It was Brandon Stewart, maybe, number 7 for A&M with that Big 12 title game way back when in the late 90s. But Keyshawn Henderson feels like the next big thing when he gets to college, and hopefully it's with the Cougs. All right, is Gary still there?
No, he hung up.
Gary said, at least a call was about John Gruden possibly being the next coach of Alabama. Now, John Gruden has been mentioned for jobs, and he will be continued to be mentioned for jobs because he's still in the football space. He has his shows online. It's a name that's available that people are going to gravitate towards. I don't know that there's anything behind that. I did find out that Kalen DeBoer, his payout, or at least his buyout, isn't something that is a bulk payment. It is something that would be a monthly payment. So it'd be like, I haven't looked at the numbers breakdown, but it wouldn't be something like Alabama's got to give him $45, $60 million in a couple lump sums. If it's what has been reported and it's monthly payments, that's easy money for Alabama. We ain't got to give you $45 million off the rip, $10K this month. 10K the next month, that's easy for them. So the structure of his buyout might be more of a thing to look into as far as, will Kalen DeBoer survive if what we saw in week one for Alabama continues? I did not know you could structure it as monthly payments. I always assume those guys get a couple lumps payments. And, you know, when January 1st hits, the buyout goes down.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're sick on college football. When you know, when people are reporting on the month and the date that you can fire someone because the buyout goes down, and you know that offhand.
I remember Kevin Sumlin's buyout was like, he needs, I think it was like 50% of it in the first 60 days after he gets fired. Like, there's a deadline to pay half of it, and then it's, you know, four times a year for the rest of until it's paid off. So, yeah. By the way, Gary's called back in to elaborate.
Okay. Gary saw something online. Regarding John Gruden and the possibility of him being the Bama head coach. What's up, Gary?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to get you guys' take, but you were already giving it. But I think it would be a horrible move. I mean, John Gruden, I mean, just a few years ago coaching, not a few years, in the league, he was talking, I mean, that racist undertone back then in the NFL. I know Alabama is deep south, and it may be a match for them in their university, but in today's society, these athletes, unless they're born and raised there or they have an affinity for Alabama, they still remember that. And, I mean, I don't know if that would be a good hire and you buying out. You know, I just don't see us playing for people of that elk anymore. I mean, it's just, I mean, anything is possible. If they want to offer you a free ride or whatever and your parents went to Alabama. But these young kids nowadays and their parents, they have research. My son's graduating. If he was offered a scholarship at Alabama, I would turn that down because of he's got history now. He's got skin in the game, and I wouldn't want him playing for John Gruden. And him coming back, I don't think that would be a good look for Alabama, given the state of Alabama.
You know, Gary, that what you're saying, not necessarily specific to John Gruden, but that refrain of why do young black players want to play in the Deep South has been a refrain for years, mostly from people who are fans of teams who don't reside in the Deep South, and it has not mattered. Now, when you put that specifically on a coach, maybe you're right, but people have asked a question, considering some of the things we maybe wrongfully believe or still believe about certain parts of the country. Why would a young kid want to play for Ole Miss when they were still flying the rebel flag? Didn't stop kids from playing there. A lot of kids were born in the state of Mississippi, and one of the goals, if they could, was to play at Ole Miss. So I get what you're saying. I don't know how big of an impact it would have, even though in your case it's about a specific person, not a culture as a whole. I don't know. I would be surprised. Well, you may have an impact or influence on your son playing for John Gruden. I don't know if that would be that big of a stumbling block, because it just hasn't been in the past regarding the actual universities and where they're located and some of their attitudes towards certain things. Sometimes football supersedes all the things we think it shouldn't. But I appreciate the call, Gary. We'll go to break with that. If you want to join the show, you can, 713-780-3776. We're at Texas Card House until noon. It's a busy couple days for us. Not only did we do a couple shows here, tomorrow the entire station is going to be at East River 9. And then after that, starting at 6:30, we're going to be at St. Arnold for our listener appreciation party. That'll go to 9:30. One of the big events will be the roast. So if you want to hear a professional comedian, go after the host here. Hopefully, if you have a spot, that'll happen. Of course, we're going to feed you. You'll also get the drink, the great beers from St. Arnold. So, people who will be there feeding you: BB Tech's Orleans, Great Plate Hospitality, Nico Nico's, Taquerias Orandas, and Portillo's, and of course, as I said, those drinks from St. Arnold. So it'll be a good time. Hopefully, you got in. Appreciate all the interest in being at that party. And we're not that far away. We've been talking about it for quite a bit now. 6:30 tomorrow at St. Arnold. We'll go to
Bullpen Saturdays at noon on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Ooh.
Now back to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Texas Card House. Here's Del Olalea.
So Sam's still here with us, or at least with me. And I informed her that Justin Bieber dropped his surprise album. It's called Swag Too, Sean, if you're unaware. And she found it a little offensive. I don't know why. I mean, she goes, are you being sexist? No. More than women like Justin Bieber, I think. At least this version of him. I just thought she might want to know. She's an Usher fan. There's a connection there between Usher and Justin Bieber. Maybe not such a great one when you throw Diddy into the mix. But I just assume she might care. She does not care about Swag 2. If you guys were wondering when the Biebs would put out new music, it's out.
Was there a Swag 1?
I would assume there was a Swag 1. I don't know how you put out Swag 2 without Swag 1, but it's out there. I can
Yes,
promise.
There was a Swag 1.
Of course there is. I mean, what's
Oh, from July 11th?
Oh, he put out Swag 1 this summer?
Yeah, looks like.
Okay. So he's got more songs put out there. So.
Okay, wow.
The prolific Justin Bieber.
He did the LeBron James move of a deluxe album? Is that what this is, or is this another album?
Is it a full new album, or is it the deluxe? Who knows?
It's not on Spotify yet, so I can't tell you.
Maybe it's on his website or something.
Or,
maybe
you know, it's probably dropping tonight, right?
Oh, yes. It's dropping midnight tonight. Okay. So Sam can give a review. She's going to be at East River 9 taking pictures.
I'll put up updates.
I'm going to need you to give us a review of Swag 2, Sam, and let us know what you think of the Bieber second album. In fact, just listen to Swag 1 as well. That's how I'll spend the 11 o'clock hour talking to you and then talking to Michael Carroll. So we'll do that tomorrow with Sam. Hopefully she comes through. Kind of have my doubts on that. But she's shaking her head no, so I guess we're ruling that out. All right, so we'll move on from that. A couple minutes here before we go to break and finish out the first hour of the show. If you want to join us, maybe not in this segment, but if you want to join us for the next segment before we go, 713-780-3776 is that number. So the Clippers have responded to the accusation that they were involved in salary cap circumvention. Of course, understandably, they say, we did not do that. We are not responsible for what Aspiration, which is the company in question, who gave Kawhi Leonard $28 million. We're not responsible for that. Yeah, ignore that Steve Ballmer was an investor. And Kawhi Leonard, not known as the most gregarious person, we're just going to give $28 million to you to talk about, or not talk about in this case, a tree planting company. So New Balance, who forced him into commercials where he didn't speak, gave him $25 million over the same span. Right. So New Balance, who had him wear their shoes, put him in commercials, gave him less money than the tree company funded by Steve Ballmer, who didn't have him do a thing. Maybe the Clippers can understand why people have some real questions. The NBA will investigate. I believe Pablo Torre, the originator of this story, as far as bringing it to the general public, has turned over what he has on this. So the NBA will take a look and see if the Clippers have committed the biggest of sins, at least when it comes to owners and money, circumventing the salary cap by somehow influencing a player to sign by just giving him extras. Look, Kawhi was looking for him. He wanted homes. He wanted things from Toronto that Toronto thought they secured. I think $15 million in extra endorsements, which you can do. You can try to maneuver into having one of your players speak for companies associated with your team, but they have to be actual companies, not ones you kind of created simply or donated money to simply for this. They actually have to be viable businesses. In this case, it appears that the Clippers kind of helped create something simply for Kawhi. And when it's a no-show job, then you got real problems. So the NBA is going to investigate. We'll see if they find anything untowards. And they take away the remaining Clipper picks and send them to the upside down. And I don't think Kawhi's contract's going to get voided, which would actually probably do the Clippers a favor. Know what they should do if they would do something like that, is void the contract but keep his number on the cap. That's how you punish them. You don't punish them by taking the money off the cap so they can go spend it on something else. It is a cap hit, a dead cap of, what, whatever, 40 plus to $50 million until his contract, his recent extension, expires. That would be a very penal way to punish the Clippers for what they did. I don't know that the NBA wants this to be a story. As I don't know that they want to investigate, but now they've been forced to because a journalist did some journalism things. And where you stand, Sean, of course, if it happened to a team we cared about, we'd probably be more upset. But is he a snitch if he goes after now Jalen Brunson? Because he talked about that on Dan Patrick, that he found it odd that Jalen Brunson would take as much less as he did with the Knicks. Is he a snitch if he now goes after the Knicks, or is he just a guy doing his job?
I think he's just a guy doing his job, working down the list of like, huh, that was weird that Jalen Brunson took like $100 million discount for no reason. Oh, let's take a look at least. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like people don't know what the word snitch means.
Yeah, that was what I was going to get to. There is a disconnect between what a snitch is and what a snitch isn't. Like, you can be a whistleblower.
Yeah.
But if a snitch is someone involved in the activities,
yeah,
who was benefiting from them until the feds came and said, "Hey, if you don't talk to us, then you're going to take the fall. And if you do talk to us, your punishment will be lessened or you get immunity." That's a snitch.
Yeah,
like a reporter reporting on news isn't a snitch.
He's investigating the thing. He's not part of the thing and flipping on the Clippers.
Yeah.
Like, if it came out that Pablo Torre also had a no-show job planting trees.
Yes. Then he's a snitch.
Then he's a snitch.
I still think we need to look into whether the Clippers were forced to give Kawhi that max extension because he would have been like, hey,
yeah,
do I need to float some documents out if you don't give me my money? Because Paul George didn't get that type of deal when he signed, which I would be upset with. I didn't get the extras that Kawhi did.
I need Paul George to comment on this on his next podcast.
He needs to be asked.
I need him to
podcast
comment.
Podcast P needs to talk about this.
he needs to comment.
He should be insulted that he didn't get the same type of deal from the Clippers. And he should start asking questions. Did Kawhi threaten them with snitching? And that's why he got his extension, and that's why I didn't? Those are the questions I would be asking as Paul George.
Also, why didn't they just pay off his uncle? Why wasn't that the way they do that? Why did they do it this way?
Did they feel like the $28 million or whatever the number would have been was easier to trace if you pay off an individual instead of sending it to Kawhi Leonard's LLC with his name attached? I don't know. It all feels sloppy.
or Uncle Dennis LLC. Like, just send it
whatever.
To a different LLC.
Yeah, so at the moment, it's the Clippers aren't in the crossfire for fraud. They're not the target of a potential case that the government's involved in. It's simply the NBA is looking into it. Is there more where Steve Ballmer himself is involved in something that could be prosecuted? We don't know that. Even the investigative journalist Pablo Torre is not suggesting that this is criminal. It's just from a sports story.
Yeah, it's circumventing the cell.
You're involved with a company that apparently has defrauded their creditors, and now you have to see if Adam Silver is going to make you an example. David Stern, we know, would have. In fact, he did it when he was running the league. We'll see if his protege does the same. All right, that's an update on that. The Clippers say, hey, we did nothing wrong. The reporter says, yeah, you probably did. We'll see where it falls when the NBA actually looks into this. We'll go to break with that. We're done with hour one here at Texas Card House. We're at the Spring location. Come out and join us. A couple games going on right now. When I got in this morning, I got here about 6:20 and a game was going on. So that speaks to the level of activity. Kind of doesn't matter what time it is. If you want a game, they're likely going to have one. And they got two kind of robust games going as we speak. So we'll get to hour two when we come back. We got a list. We haven't done a list in a while. It's a list of teams who have lost their opener and then went on to win a national title. So this is of utmost importance to Sean. Not me, because my team wouldn't ever lose their first game of the season. But teams like Texas, they did. So we'll see if they are likely to overcome that and maybe go win a national title. Some teams have, unfortunately not that recently. So we'll talk about that when we come back. But before we go. I want to tell you about Monument Chevrolet. They're in Pasadena. They're off of Beltway 8 and 225. So they have a wide selection of vehicles. Sam actually's been out there. She's filmed some commercials with them. They're great people. You should meet them there as well. So you check out what they have on the website, monumentchevrolet.com, and then see what you want. The vehicles are great, whether you want a Blazer or a Malibu or a Trax or one of those Silverado 1500s. Their cars are perfect for whatever you want. So you see the price that you love and the car that you love on the website, then head on out there. And one of the great parts about them is you won't be tricked. You're not going to get a different price once you pick out the car. You're going to start talking to the people on site, tell them what you need, tell them what you can do, and they're going to make sure you get into the car that you love. And the other thing about them is they understand the car buying experience can be a little tricky. They're going to make it as easy for you as possible. While they won't rush you, they're not going to hold you up. They understand you don't want to be there forever finding the car that you want. They'll get you into the car that you want as quickly as possible so you're happy driving off the lot. So whether you want a new vehicle or a pre-owned one or something for your fleet because you own a business, it's all there for you at Monument Chevrolet. So the website is monumentchevrolet.com, and then head on out there to Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And remember this, Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.